You are now listening to the Invited Podcast with Cedric Harris and Tia McClain. You've officially been invited. Welcome to the Invited Podcast. Bianca Latham is a mental performance consultant and is the founder of GOAT Mentality Mental Performance Consulting, which uses sports psychology to empower athletes and enhance performance. Bianca earned her bachelor's degree in psychology from SEMO, Southeast Missouri State, and an MBA from JFK University, as well as a master's degree in sports psychology from National University. She has a love for sports, played college basketball while attending SEMO, and played basketball professionally for the St. Louis Surge. We are excited to learn more about Bianca and the importance of prioritizing mental health and how that coincides with sports. Bianca, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes.
Yeah, so let's just hop right into it. Can you just tell us a little bit about GOAT Mentality, Mental Performance Consulting, and what your inspiration was behind starting this company?
So GOAT Mentality really is about, when we think about athletes and their performance, a lot of times we think about just the physical. And so GOAT Mentality, Mental Performance Consulting, I know it's long, but it's really about that mental approach to the game. A lot of times some of the barriers that athletes have are not their talent, right? They're really talented. They have the physical ability, but they don't have the mental focus. They're not motivated, or they're feeling anxious in pressured situations, things of that nature. And so that's where someone like myself comes in, a mental performance coach or a mental performance consultant, and assist the athlete on the mental game and their mindset as it relates to their performance.
Okay. And so when you went to school, was it always your goal to study psychology? Like, did you always know you wanted to mesh mental health and sports together?
So I will say that I was a peculiar child, and I always knew that I loved psychology, and I knew that I wanted to do something with sports. And so in the seventh grade, I remember telling my mom, she was like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was researching, how can I connect sports and psychology? And sports psychology was still a very early field at that time. But I knew, I was like, I'm going to be a sports psychologist. And so I'm not a sports psychologist yet, because I do need a doctoral degree to have that title. Yeah. But that's in the making.
So coming soon. Yes.
So yes, I did always know that I wanted to be in the field and marry kind of psychology and sports together.
I like it. And so kind of going back to GOAT Mentality, what are some reasons that someone would be seen by you? Like, what are some of the typical things that you see clients for?
So I know what's common a lot in the field today is anxiety. And a lot of people come to me when they have problems. So I'm seeing a lot of people with like anxiousness or like inability to focus. But you can come to me for a variety of things. Confidence is another thing where, like, in certain pressure situations, they're not performing well, or they just don't have confidence in general with shooting, or they have this fear of failure. But some of the best athletes that we know of, the Kobe Bryants, the Michael Jordan, the LeBron James, all of them use mental skills and sports psychology in some facet. And I try to encourage athletes or anyone who's in high performance to see a sports psychologist or mental performance consultant before there's a problem, because we can provide you with the tools to help enhance your performance and take it to that next level, even if you don't have kind of a problem per se.
That makes sense.
And so with you being a longtime athlete, can you just talk to us about how you got introduced to sports in the first place? And what was your childhood like in the home?
Okay, so so both of my parents were athletes. My father was in the military, but even though we were overseas, my father still played basketball. He still played football. Mm-hmm. And to tell you a little bit about his background and my mom's background, my mom played basketball. And my father, he actually won a state championship in wrestling and chess.
That's quite the combo.
I know. So chess, but he played a bunch of sports, and my mom played a bunch of sports as well. So sports is kind of ingrained in all me and all my siblings. And so I started out actually playing softball, I believe was my first sport. And then obviously, or I don't know about obviously, but if you talk to a lot of athletes from my generation, a lot of girls, we all did gymnastics, or some form of dance or gymnastics. So I did dance, gymnastics, played basketball, played softball, was just really, it's track, you name it. I was into sports. I just loved the competitiveness about it. So, yeah.
So my brain goes to, I'm always thinking about how parents like impact and rub off on their children. So we just talked about like the athleticism and how your parents were both athletes. Did you also get your like your entrepreneurial genes from them? So starting your own, you know, business, like where did that come from?
So I'm going to double back real quick about athleticism because I need to mention this about my mom or else she's going to kill me. So my mother actually got a track scholarship to go to UCM. She did not go to UCM, though. The day she was supposed to leave and go, my grandfather had a premonition, a dream, a vision that she was going to get in a car accident and die. He was like, you are not going. So she never went there. She ended up going to UMSL and not running track. But I do want to mention that she was a scholarship athlete.
Yes.
And so, but as it relates to my entrepreneurial spirit, it actually, I'll say that it does come from my mother's side. So my grandmother is an entrepreneur. Like she had multiple businesses. She ran a salon, she ran a chocolate shop, and even right now she runs an in-home healthcare business. So a lot of that, she just is like business. How can I make money doing things that I'm really good at? And my mom also has a consulting company, Set On Solutions, where she consults with people about kind of problem solving in whatever area they are. So I'll say that entrepreneurial spirit definitely comes from my mom and my grandma.
Very cool.
And so sticking on that topic about, you know, being an entrepreneur, can you walk us through some of the steps that it took or some of the logistics behind getting or founding Goat Mentality? A lot of people see the businesses, but they don't see like how it became a business. Can you talk to us a little bit about the background?
Oh, so I will say my experience is a little different because I do run another business with my sisters where we have a clothing company for women's clothing. And so managing that, I'll just be honest, I was like, I don't know if I want to do my own consulting company. And I had one of my friends was like, look, girl, you want to do this. You said you was going to do it. And I'm not going to lie, she kind of pushed me. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. And so I did utilize some of the skills from my MBA, put out a business plan. And from that business plan, I went through the steps of how I was going to, you know, create Goat Mentality, getting the LLC, creating that timeline, and then actually going through with the actual launch. And I'm kind of glad she did push me because I'll say the timing, it's never a good time, really. But the timing of kind of Simone Biles and a lot of athletes just in general who are coming out about mental health and the assistance and how it's kind of been forgotten about and them just like being in the spotlight, it just takes away that the stigma associated with like mental performance and getting assistance with your mental health, as well as just the mental performance aside of sports.
So Bianca, you mentioned that you have a clothing line with your sister. So tell us more about BCB, kind of how it came to be, how it started, and like what it's like.
Okay, so one, BCB is, it's all of our initials. So my mom obviously loved the B name. And so me and my sisters are Brianna, Bianca, Belicia, and we all, at the time had the last name Beck and all of us have C middle initials. So we wanted something that connected us as sisters, but BCB does also have meaning of believe, create, become. And so we wanted to produce clothing that empowered women to kind of believe, create, and become that best version of themselves. And so that's kind of how BCB came together. We all have different skill sets and it complemented us enough to come and create a business where we could, you know, work together. So, yeah.
what type of clothes do y'all offer for, you know, people who might be in the market?
So as of right now, most of it is casual wear and fitness, mm-hmm. but there is some coming soon where we plan on expanding with some more professional wear, as well as, we haven't released it yet, but okay. we just know we got some different things coming as far as like professional wear, club wear, you know, just kind of all the things that are associated with women's apparel, should I say.
Expanding. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Oh, exclusives dropped here on the Invited Podcast. Yes. Coming soon. But kind of talking about your journey. We mentioned previously that you were an athlete, played basketball. What was your decision like to continue to play in college? I know we went to SEMO, but like, were there any other schools that you could have gone to? What was the decision like as far as balancing your playing career, also with your education when it comes to going into college?
So I actually, going to college, I was, as a high school player, I went to Perennial Powerhouse and Carter Ward Academy. We won a state championship there. I was heavily recruited and ranked in my class. In my graduating class, and as point guards and just as a player in general. So there were a lot of different schools that I actually could have gone to. And I will say I did encounter a little bit of adversity because I tore my ACL my junior year in high school. And so thankfully it did not prevent colleges from still recruiting me. I did still want to be a little close to home. I also had kind of the wherewithal to know that I needed to go to a university that was not too much of a party school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it needed to be boring enough. It needed to be entertaining enough to keep me busy, but boring enough to keep me focused.
Yes.
So SEMO for me was that happy middle. Otherwise, you know, you got to know yourself. And I'm not ashamed to say, you know, if I'd have went to like a Tennessee State University, I would have ended up pregnant freshman year. So you got to know yourself. And I was like, I would have probably dropped out from partying from Sunday to Tuesday to Sunday. So I was like, let me know thyself. That's how going to SEMO, though, I did have that in mind, as well as obviously my degree in psychology. I knew that I wanted to go in psychology, and they had a ranked psychology program at the time. I'm not sure if it's ranked now, but they had a very good psychology program at the time. And like I said, it was close to home, and I knew that I could make an immediate impact playing basketball. I did as a freshman become the first true freshman to ever start a home opener game. So, okay. And I have some awards there. So that was another big part of me going. I wanted to go somewhere that I could be competitive.
That is definitely crucial. So I'm glad that you were aware of your surroundings and picking like the right school choice. But digging more into your life as an athlete. So on social media, I know I saw this kind of recently that women's and men's sports can often differ quite a bit in terms of how much funding they receive. And so like I saw a tweet and the girls' basketball team had like some weights and something super small, like compared to what the men's gym looked like. So tell us about like your experience as a woman athlete versus maybe some of the men like athletes.
So I will say that issue was definitely prevalent during the time that I was at SEMO. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still prevalent across sports in general. While there has been leaps and bounds made and progress, it's still that issue. One,
right.
I will say one that's not necessarily in the news as much was even the University of Tennessee Lady Vols. The women's program actually like sued the school because they were the winning program and they weren't receiving the funding, even though they were bringing in the money and they were giving more money to the men. And the men's coach was making more than, you know, like Pat Summit. And when it's like,
yeah,
makes not sense. Only are they bringing in the money, the fans, but you're still giving the boys more money. So, I mean, it's an issue. And I'll tell you, as far as SEMO, some of the issues that I saw definitely had to do with like travel. We always had to take the bus. It was one bus. It wasn't, you know, to where the boys maybe would take two buses. They would take stops. They would have more gear than us. You know, throughout a season, you'd get maybe two shoes. They would get like five. Yeah, it'd be, wow. I know it seems like little, but it's kind of big when you're practicing a lot and you're wearing your shoes out. So, I mean, that was kind of how we saw the funding, even like with restaurants, when you're traveling and going to get food, that dictates where you can go to get food as you're traveling. You know, they're going to gourmet restaurants. We're going to fast food. I mean, and it impacts your performance. All of that kind of matters. But that's where, I don't know, that was my experience as it relates to how I experienced the difference in funding.
And so with that, like you said, like that's a lot to deal with, you know, seeing other people receive better benefits than you. You're also a student at the same time, as well as being a performer on the court. Do you think during your playing days that a mental performance consultant would have been beneficial to your playing career at all?
Absolutely. absolutely. I will say, so there was a lot that I know a lot that my team went through. And I know me personally, I went from a winning program that lost in my 4 years in high school. I think we might have lost 11 games to barely making 500 my freshman year. Losing was not in my identity.
Right.
It was different for me to come into a culture that was like, oh, you know, we got 500, we'll make it here. I was just like, oh, this ain't good for me. I don't know how to function. And I recognize it now, but I was going through a little bit of depression, like managing, like, whoa, like, I don't know how to, I wasn't necessarily in love with the sport anymore. And I had to kind of find that for myself. And there were times where my confidence was up and down, or times where I just wasn't focused or in it. And I think a mental performance consultant or even a sports psychologist would have been extremely beneficial, not only for me, but for my teammates as well.
And I have one more question about the male versus female athletes. And I have another one to follow up, but, Do you realistically see it changing anytime soon? And what needs to happen to see a change or make it more of an equal playing field?
I will be honest and say I think it will be a slow progress. It will eventually, but I don't see. I'll say I feel. I was a little discouraged by the U.S. women's soccer team and the ruling on their case as far as like the equal funding there. If you're familiar with it, they make more money than the men. They bring in the fans. They're a winning team.
Yeah.
You know, people want to see them on the main screen as far as like TV. But when it comes to how they're paid, the men get more anemones, you know, you can't really get pregnant. There's just a lot more restrictions, and they're not being paid as much. And so I feel like that ruling kind of, I don't know, discouraged me a little bit. So I'm still, if you're asking my personal opinion, I think that progress will be made, but we still have a ways to go. I'll give you a perfect example of right now. I just was looking on Instagram and I saw a post that was talking about the WNBA. We're in the playoffs right now.
Yeah.
Two examples. One, the Chicago Sky just won, and they had to take 3 commercial flights to get back to Chicago. Do you think the Bulls would be taking 3 commercial
exactly.
flights? And one of them was at 3 a.m. It would not be happening.
That's
they
crazy.
Would have their own private plane and they'd be going back in the playoffs, mind you. And another example is this weekend, this is the WNBA playoffs, and they moved the showing of the game from ESPN to ESPN2 for a regular season college football game. Regular season college football game over playoffs. That would not happen in the NBA. It wouldn't happen. And
Never.
So what I feel like needs to change is definitely, one, corporations have to value us. You know, I think society has to value women's sports. And I think corporations need to start putting their money where the mouth is, because they're saying, oh, we support women's sports. But when you look at the money, you're giving, you know, 10 times to the NBA compared to what you're giving to the WNBA. And even the WNBA, it's under the NBA umbrella.
Right.
Why do we not have the same resources? It's we're under your umbrella, you know? So I don't know. I feel like progress will be made, but until people start reallocating some money towards women's sports, I don't know that there will be fast change. It'll be slow. So yeah.
And like you said, the men have to also value the sport just as much as the women. And like to the WNBA point about the flights, I was reading that the reason that they have to take so many commercial flights because now all the owners can afford to fly private. But it's like you said, it's the playoffs and you're an owner. Exactly. So if you have the money to buy a team, you should have the money to take care of your players, take care of the people that are bringing you the money in the first place. So.
Well, not only that, if all these airlines are supporting women's sports, why can't you give them certain flights for free? And in addition to that, in each city, there's a WNBA team, or not in all of them. I take that back. In most cities where there's a WNBA team, there's an NBA team. You ain't using your flight right now. It's not your season.
Yeah.
Let us borrow a plane. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know y'all got some private planes. Let us borrow it.
Simple.
Yeah, that's my opinion. Shoot.
Yeah, no, I totally feel that. And I think so. Just like with us seeing the first Black president in our lifetime, I think we will, like you said, it's going to take some time, but it will happen. Don't just say you support me. Actually finance me if you actually support what I'm doing. And Bianca, so I'm interested. I'm always interested in people's journeys. Tell us about maybe some of the experiences you had outside of sports that helped to prepare you for the role that you're in now.
Ooh, now that's a question. some experiences outside of sports. So I'll say that no coaching is technically in sports.
I mean, well, coaching is different though. So maybe I shouldn't have said sports. That's super broad. Maybe I should say outside of being an athlete.
So I mean, outside of being an athlete, I will say just my experience with in my current position. I do have another full-time job where I work as a private duty account manager, and I also do scheduling. It's a small business, so, you know, everybody has to wear multiple hats. And so I work with a lot of elderly individuals, and I will say that it's very similar to working with high schoolers because they're moody, they're frustrated, they're going through these different changes, and still being able to relate and communicate with them and give them the respect and empowering them. So I will say that did help me a little bit in my position and kind of prepare me for kind of the whole, and I don't want to say therapy role, but just being able to communicate with someone, because nobody wants to be talked down to. And people, there still is a large stigma with mental performance, therapy, mental health. And so just being able to have a conversation with them and speak to them in a way that they can receive information. So I will say that has prepared me. And I will say that coaching has too, because when you're doing mental performance, I mean, I can't do the work for you, but I can direct you. And I feel like the same thing is in coaching. And I'm doing that kind of the same in a similar way with consulting and helping athletes, just in a different approach, you know, more so with the mind than the skills of the body.
I like it.
And with your kind of like you said, your experiences now, you've had a lot of experiences before you got up to this point. So coming out of college, you had a lot of post undergrad experience as well. Can you talk to us about the kind of the decision making going to get those advanced degrees, whether it be the MBA or the master's in psychology, and what kind of influenced that overall?
So, there's a lot to unpack here. Okay. So first, as it relates to psychology and making sure, I wanted to make sure that I wanted to pursue sports psychology. Mm-hmm. And so for my internships, I really was very intentional about where I wanted to intern, because I was like, oh, maybe I think I want to do a little bit of social work. Let me explore this. And so I did work at a recreational facility called, or not at a recreational facility. I worked at Cottonwood, which is troubled youth, and they're put into a facility, but I did recreational therapy with them. And I knew from that experience that I did not want to do psychiatric care with troubled youth that are like physically combative with me, that was not my calling. And then I also went into an internship where I was doing following social work, and I was actually at St. Louis Family Haven.
Okay.
My mother at the time was the director. So she was like, explore the whole place. So I got to work with Catholic charities. I got to work with housing. And at the time, a tornado hit. I can't remember which tornado, but a tornado hit. And so I really got to see that side of assisting families in that facet as well. But I also got to see the therapy that went along with helping homeless individuals and then transitioning them to housing. And while that was, it truly was a great experience, it also was not my calling. And so I was like, okay, this ain't it. Good. And then even after that, I also, I did coaching as well, where I coached high school girls and I coached college girls. And I absolutely love coaching, and I will always, I'm coaching now, but I knew that college coaching was not my calling either. I was, or maybe not at that time, I was still too like close to being a player, and I was technically a player because I was still playing professional. And so it was too frustrating for me to navigate, like, just do this right. Yeah. And so I was like, no, I need to step back. I do coach now though. I do skills coach with girls basketball, with youth basketball, but it's still not as involved to where I'm traveling and away from my family. I do have a son, and I want to be present for him growing up. And I know so many coaches that are like super moms, and they are killing it at the game.
Yeah,
that is not for me. So that was another thing that went into my decision of definitely staying this route of, you know, mental performance and getting my degree. I will say, I knew that at some point I did not want to work for someone else. Mm. And so in order for me to have that independence, I wanted that MBA so that when I did start my consulting company, I knew what I was doing. I didn't want, you know, to be working for someone else. And I wanted to know the ins and outs of how business worked. So that's why I pursued that degree. And I'm actually in the process of, and so I did pursue my master's in sports psychology, because that was the next step. And I am getting my, I'm about to take a test for, to get my CMPC license, which is a certified mental performance consultant. And I am applying for clinical psychology doctoral programs right now. So definitely say some prayers for me with that. Wish me luck submitting my applications, hoping to get some letters back of acceptance. So yes. And as far as like getting my doctoral degree, I'll just be very candid and say that I am a Black woman in a white male dominated field. Mm-hmm. And as many Black women know, you have to be the highest of standard in order to, I don't know, penetrate the field. And so I want the knowledge, that clinical background knowledge, so that I can be able to assist the athletes in another way. But also I want that freedom, right, to be able to do whatever it is that I want to do. Exactly. Without having restrictions from, oh, you only have a master's. Mm-hmm. So that was another reasoning for me pursuing my education. So, yeah.
And we definitely, so I heard some very, like, very important, crucial pieces in what you just mentioned. And so, listeners, it's equally as important to figure out what you don't like versus figuring out what it is that you do like. And it's not a waste of time. So when I work with students, it's always like, well, what if I don't want to do that? Or what if that's not what I'm supposed to do? It's okay. It's all a part of your journey. It's teaching you about your interest. It's helping you to solidify what it is you should be doing, where your place is in the world. And you won't know what that is unless you go try things. So thank you for sharing that story. You also mentioned that you're a mommy, and you also mentioned that you played professional basketball. So can we first jump into, what is it like to play professional basketball? How was that like experience?
So I will say it was a great experience, especially playing in my hometown of St. Louis, to be able to like play. You know, I played high school in front of a lot of fans, but, you know, going away to college, I was not, you know, in front of my family as much. And to be able to, you know, play professionally in front of, I think the St. Louis Surge has one of the most loyalist and best crowds. And so to be able to play in front of my hometown, in front of my friends, my family, my coaches, you know, that's a pride that you can't, I don't know. That's an experience everyone should have, I hope. But yeah, playing professionally was always a dream for me. And so I was glad to be able to do that and win two national championships.
Okay.
More while accolades. Doing that. Yes. So yeah. Yeah. So it was a blessing. And it was fun. It was a fun ride.
So how'd that experience come about?
So actually after I graduated, a coach from the past reached out to me and said, hey, you know, there's a professional team in St. Louis, she was saying, hey, there was this other team in St. Louis she was trying to get me to play for. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, all right, no. Don't go there. Don't play for them. And I'll be honest, I was in front of them and they were like, oh, you know, sign here. And I don't know what I'm telling you, the Holy Spirit will move you in ways. Mm. And something told me, do not sign this. And I was like, let me think about it. I'm gonna come back. And then that same coach called me again and said, did you sign? I was like, no. She was like, all right, this is the team you need to go with the St. Louis Surge. And I was like, all right. I went to one of their games. I spoke with Kalia Collier, who is the owner and GM. And as soon as I got there, I was sold. I was like, all right, this is home for me. I can come here. I went to like two practices and I was like, oh yes, y'all got me. I'm ready to play. Put me in, coach, give me a jersey. Mm-hmm. So that's how that came about.
And so speaking of family, so you just mentioned, you know, you really love just having your family there when you get to play. Let's jump into your new family. So you are a wife, you are a mother. How did you meet your husband? And then also, how is it balancing all that you do, but also being a wife and a mother?
Okay. Ooh, this is a lot to unpack too. So look, me and my husband, I am a member of the illustrious sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Okay. And I was at a step show when I met my husband at a step show. Okay. Essentially. And I actually was talking trash to some other guys. We were going back and forth about the Lakers and the Celtics. I am a Celtics fan, although I love LeBron James and root for the Lakers and go. I've gone to Lakers games and I'm a Laker fan now because of LeBron. But I am I'm a Boston Celtics fan, diehard. Mm-hmm. And so I was in an argument with some guys and he put his arm around me. He was like, hey, you need to chill out, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, we went to this party that where we're supposed to, you know, have s'mores, and s'mores never happened, but we ended up chit-chatting it and hit it off from there. And so and now we're married with a kid. So so yeah, it and all this happened at a step show. So that's the short story of how I met him. He's not from St. Louis. He's from North Carolina, so that's why that step show. And he is an alpha. He's a member of Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. So that's why it was that step show and our Greek connection was how we met. And so what was the second question?
Yeah. So fast forward. So y'all are married. You have a child now. Like, how do you balance wearing all these different hats?
I will say family support. And not only support from family, but support from my husband as well. And we do a really good job of communicating with one another. Here's what I need. We got schedules. And then again, like I said, family support has been essential. When I first had my son, I don't know if y'all have children, but childcare costs too much, especially if you don't have before your child is one, I mean, childcare
is ridiculous.
If you are middle class, upper middle class, you paying anywhere from, you know, 1800 to 25 a month.
Eesh.
And so
that's ridiculous.
And what, his parents are retired. They moved in with us until my son turned one, and they really helped because I was still in school at this time. Mm-hmm. I was finishing my master's in sports psychology, and my husband is actually in the MBA program at WashU, and we're both working full time. So having that support, and even now my in-laws do no longer live with us. They went back to North Carolina, but my mom comes and watches my son twice a week when, you know, I'm doing my stuff and my husband is at school. So just having that support. And then I think me and him do a really good job of work-life balance. Y'all know I'm a mental performance coach, so I are consultant. So I definitely preach that to my athletes, but it's something I practice myself, and my husband does too. And so we talk out, hey, this is a stressful time. We shut it down. You know, we will stop and go on vacation in a heartbeat. So, and we practice that work-life balance. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like I ask every married person on the show this: what did you see, or what made you know that this was the person you wanted to marry?
There were a lot of things that I saw. I'm not sure when the moment was where I was like, we're going to marry him. Cause I think I said that early on. I'm pretty sure, like, while we were still dating, boyfriend and girlfriend, I was like, I'm gonna marry your wife. but I'll say, I don't know what it was. I'll just be very candid and say I was very intentional about what I prayed for, mm-hmm. and praying that I would be prepared to receive a husband. Ooh. So when my husband showed up with everything that I prayed for, I was like, oh, yeah, that's why I was like, oh, you checked all the boxes that I prayed for. And I said, you didn't know you were going to be my husband, but I did.
I know.
So I'm glad you came. it was more so my response. So I don't know if that answers the question, but
it does. No, definitely. And just one more question, kind of focused on marriage. I'm sorry, I have so many questions, Cedric. I feel like there's been a lot of controversy more recently about women choosing to take their husband's last name or not. So what went into your decision to ultimately change your last name?
So I will say that was more so of a faith decision.
Mm-hmm.
I am a Messianic Jew, and it's just part of, I don't know, the culture, the tradition, to take the husband's last name. It's not something that I had a problem with per se. I know that I will say this, I'll be candid and say I had a bunch of feelings when I was, you know, my ID and it ain't say Beck no more. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about this no more, you know, but understanding that I still have my own, I'm still an individual within the marriage, and I'm still Bianca, and he respected that. And so I think it was just easier for me knowing that it wasn't like he was forcing it on me. It was a decision. You do what you want to do. You come to your conclusion how you want to. And, you know, my last name is his last name. And I think every couple should go in with having that conversation ahead of time. How are you going to come to that decision? What is it that the last name means, you know,
right?
So that y'all can have an understanding before you make the decision to be married.
Thank you for touching on that.
And you touched on, like, your family dynamic and essentially how you all communicate very well together, but also aware of each other's stressors, your mental health status, and how to cope with that.
Mm-hmm.
How have you seen over the years, you touched on it earlier, like the stigma of mental health and how it's changed over the years, but it's specifically in the Black community?
Ooh, so it has, I will say I've seen progress in the Black community because I've seen more people just say, reach out to me and say, where do I need to go to get these resources?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, there's still a stigma. Especially with working with youth. Like I interned as a mental performance coach at a lot of places, and the issues I had most were with some of the Black students because they were like, I don't need to see a shrink. And I was like, well, I'm not a shrink. and usually those were the ones who actually had a lot to unpack. Exactly. Like I said, because that stigma associated with it, but I have seen a transition, especially in kind of adults who are like, yo, this is normal. People go to therapy. It doesn't mean something's wrong with me. This is just a part of my self-care and making sure that I'm mentally kind of clear. I have mental clarity and I'm mentally well, the same way you go to a gym or a doctor to make sure you're healthy. I mean, you need to make sure your brain is healthy too and your emotions. So yeah.
Exactly. And I feel like it is the truth that they go hand in hand. So your physical health is impacted by your mental health and vice versa.
Absolutely.
So is there anything that you would say to someone who is resistant or maybe a little nervous about going to therapy?
I would, first I would ask them, you know, one, you need to understand why you're resistant to therapy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like, because they're like, well, there's nothing wrong with me. Mm. And there doesn't need to be anything wrong with you for you to just go to talk therapy where you just need to vent. Exactly. Or, I mean, a lot of people think it's just associated with a diagnosis. Like, you'll be diagnosed with something, and that's not the case at all. Going to therapy is literally like just clearing your mind, right? When you have a lot to unpack, or you have, or if you just want to develop skills that you didn't know how. We are not necessarily taught by our parents how to cope with our emotions. And especially in the Black culture, you shouldn't be showing emotion. And mm-hmm. so for, you know, us now, when we're learning, like, how do I navigate expressing my emotion in a healthy way? You need to go to a professional for that. You know, it's not always good to go to your pastor or your rabbi or whoever, you know. You need to go to someone who specializes in it. So, yeah.
And I think this is the perfect kind of transition to like our kind of like our segment piece. Mm-hmm. We'll go ahead and just ask you a few questions. Just give us the first couple of things to come to mind. We'll have a few different fun things for you, because you dropped a gem there for sure. So I don't see how we can follow that with any other mental health questions. But this will be a fun one. So start one, bench one, cut one. So we have Maya Moore, Candace Parker, Asia Wilson.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that I like this game. if I'm starting somebody, it's definitely Maya.
Okay.
Ooh, that means you got to cut somebody too.
I know. That's where I'm struggling. Because I honestly think they're about to go head to head too, Asia and Candace.
Yeah, the Chicago Sky just made it to the finals, so.
I know. I'm gonna go ahead and say I'm a bench Candace.
Okay.
And I'm gonna cut Asia.
Okay.
Asia Masoror. But fun fact about Candace Parker, she's born in St. Louis.
Yes.
I read that the other day. I didn't know that until a couple days ago.
Yeah. Born in St. Louis. Raised in Chicago.
Very cool.
Got another one for you on the men's side. Mm-hmm. So you got Steph Curry, Dame Lillard, Kyrie Irving.
So I'm going to start Steph. I'm going to bench Damian, and I'm going to cut Kyrie. I love Kyrie, but I need a little more consistency and less injury.
Yeah, he always has a lot going on, just like right now. So I feel that.
That one was a little bit easier for her to make a decision on. And we have a quick would you rather. So would you rather be the best player on a bad, terrible team or the worst player on a championship team?
Now this is me personally. I'd rather be the worst player on a championship team because I know they're going to push me to be better. It's all about your mindset, right? Because some people will be like, well, I want to play. Listen, I'm going to play eventually. Y'all are going to push me to play because I'm that competitive and I know the work ethic that I'm going to put in to whereas you can be the best. It's so deflating to be the best on a terrible team. It's just, I don't care what anyone says. It's no, put me on the best squad. I like to win, and I know I'm gonna get better. So yeah.
That's an amazing answer.
Yeah.
Wow.
The thoughts behind it. Yeah. It makes perfect sense. I was going back and forth earlier. I wasn't sure, but now I'm with you. So, there we go. I'm good. And so this is just a little word association. So we'll say a few words, and then you just give us the first couple thoughts that come to mind when you hear this word or a name.
Okay.
The first one being Nico.
Oh, my son. I love him. He's amazing. And how I don't know if you knew that, but yeah, that's my son's name. I love it. He's amazing.
How old is your son?
He's one.
He's one. Okay. What about St. Louis?
I love St. Louis. I know a lot of people do not like, I don't know. I feel like people who are from St. Louis are like, I want to get out. I'm like, yo, I love St. Louis. We're the most diverse area, city. I love St. Louis. I don't care what nowhere says. I love it.
I feel that.
And then last,
it means home. It means home.
Yeah, I like that.
And last one, this has been getting a lot of attention lately. Mm. Ben Simmons.
She laughs.
What comes to mind? I'm interested to see where he will go and how. I'll be very candid. That mental performance side of me is interested to see how he is going to respond after everything that he's been through in Philly. And I'm interested to see how it impacts his performance for this year, wherever he goes. I don't know where he's going to land, but I will be watching.
Okay. So yeah. I have no idea what's going on with Ben Simmons. I might have to look it up later. And so we're actually going to wrap it up with a few more questions. Okay. So Bianca, what are you looking most forward to in 2022? I can't believe we are almost there.
Yes. What am I looking most forward to? Yes. So I have two nieces that are on the way. Both of my sisters are pregnant right now.
At the same time?
Yes. So I'll be, my last pregnancy, I was pregnant with my sister. Both of them did not have planned pregnancies and happened to be pregnant at the same time. And they're doing the same month.
Oh, that's cool.
So I know. And they're due in February. So it's like 2022. Yes. I got two nieces coming because both of them are having, you know, daughters. So I'm excited for that. That's really what I'm most excited for.
I love that. Well, congratulations. Yeah. I'm sure you all's kids will be, you know, like extremely close.
Yeah, cousin parties all the time.
All the time.
And they're girls. Both of my sisters are AKAs as well, and so is my mom. So we like more legacies. Yes.
I love
keep it going.
Yes.
And so what's been the greatest experience this had the biggest impact on your journey? Is there a particular experience or interaction?
So, and I'm just going to speak to recently. I have been reaching out to a lot of Black sports psychologists that I was not very familiar with. One of them was actually Dr. Barlaby, and she is a sports psychologist for the Chicago Bulls. Mm-hmm. And I would just be very candid. That has been having a conversation with her. I reached out to her on email, and she was like, look, I got a limited time, but I will talk to you. And like she was like, look, I know what it's like to be in your position, and having her reach back and saying, look, anything you need, just let me know. I'm here for you, especially as a Black woman in the field. And so that has been me reaching out and connecting with other Black women in the field has probably been one of the most, I don't know, rewarding things that I've been experiencing at this time. Cause it wasn't something that was there or that I even knew about when I first entered into sports psychology. So
what made you want to reach out in the first place?
I'll say this, I'm always looking to grow and better myself. Yeah. Just as a mental performance consultant, I'm really early in the field, and I really want to grow and make those connections. But also having another Black woman to look up to is really important to me, to have that model of this is what I can aspire to. I one of my dreams is to work in the WNBA and NBA.
Yeah.
And so to see a woman, a Black woman who's already doing that, and to have, like, I was like, I got to reach out to you. I got to talk to you. And to have her like respond and say, yeah, let's have a phone conversation. I was like, oh. It's almost like, I wouldn't say like meeting LeBron James, but it's still like meeting, you know, like a role model for me.
That is so awesome. And we actually just talked in our last interview about how important it is to have a mentor that looks like you, is relatable, mm-hmm. has a seat at the table. And so I feel like she mm-hmm. checks all those boxes. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment where you felt like she's probably not even going to respond type of thing? Or you were just like, look, I'm just going to go for it.
So I'll just be very honest and say I'm very persistent. And I reached out to her on every platform that she yes. was at in. LinkedIn, Instagram, she got her own website. I send her messages through there, YouTube, I'm very persistent yeah. when you know what you want. And when you want to connect with someone, I think that matters too. So I knew she was going to respond eventually. And if she didn't, I was going to run into her at a conference mm-hmm. and we were going to have a conversation. So I was just glad, you know, she was just open to it. So yeah.
Listeners, take heed. Like, don't think someone is out of reach. Just go for it. Just give it a try. You never know who's willing to reach their hand out and to give you some support. So just try it.
Absolutely.
And speaking of connecting, where can all the listeners get to know you a bit more and get to know more about your businesses? So your websites, your social media handles, how can people get connected with you?
Yes. So one is my website at www.goatmentality.com. I do have an Instagram page that I'm really active on, which is also Goat Mentality, but the goat does have periods in between them. So goat_mentality. And I do have a Twitter account, which is also underscore goat mentality. It's a goat mentality because someone already had goat mentality, but it's at a goat mentality. And so you can follow me there. And I actually provide a lot of mental skills, techniques, and advice that can assist athletes and even non-athletes as well. If you're just in performing, even on the business side. So yeah, check me out there.
Cool. And last question, speaking of advice, what advice would you give to someone who wants to start to prioritize their mental health? What steps can they take?
What steps can you take? So first I would say awareness. You need to be first aware of what it is that you need. Do I need to see a therapist? Do I need just a self-care day? What does that self-care look like? You need that first step is definitely awareness. And then, you know, creating that action plan of getting to where it is you want to be mentally.
Okay. And I love that answer. Mm-hmm. And I hope everyone like listens to that and really prioritizes themselves, but specifically exactly. their mental health. It's like you said, it's really important. The body is one thing, but the mind is also another thing that needs to be taken care of. So I'm glad you gave us a lot of insight today. Really appreciate you for joining us.
Really,
I know you're a busy woman, like you described, many different things going on, but I'm sure you're going to continue to succeed in all of them. And we're going to be along for the journey to watch you as well. But for the listeners, that's another episode of the Invited Podcast in the books. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Thank you.